About halfway into the four-day cruise, I had recovered to the point where I was capable of introspection. I spent a lot of time sitting very still in the ship's mess, eating. I had to sit still because I had messed up my ribs and back in the fall, and it hurt to move, even to breathe. The food was good compared to energy bars. Perhaps I ate so much of it in hopes that it would bring up the level of Allswell in my blood and chase the dark thoughts from my head. Getting me killed couldn't have been part of Fra Jad's plan. When then had it gone wrong? My foolish choices? The migrant traffic over the pole had been going on at least long enough for Jad to have heard about it. He'd known that a pharaoh like Orlo would take that route to Ekba. So it was an ancient and settled practice. We'd all underestimated its dangers precisely because it was so ancient. We'd assumed that nothing could go on for so long unless it was safe, the way a vout would run things if we were in charge. But we weren't in charge, and it wasn't run that way. Or maybe it was a safe and settled thing most of the time, but the military convoy had thrown it into chaos. Or maybe we had just been unlucky.
You look like you've been through a harrowing experience.
I snapped out of it and looked up by rotating my eyeballs, not my head, as I had a terrible crick in the neck. A man was standing there looking at me, probably in his third decade. I had noticed him eyeing me the day before. Now he had come over and said this to me as a way of striking up a conversation. I'm sorry to say I broke out laughing. It took me a minute to get it under control. Harrowing was a thing that we did, literally, to our tangles during the spring. We went through the beds on hands and knees, identifying the weeds and rooting them out with hand hose, throwing the weeds on a pile to be burned, leaving nothing except churned up soil, pulverizing the clods in our hands to leave a loose bed for expansion of the tangle plant's root systems. So when this stranger suggested I'd been through a harrowing experience, my mind went straight to that, and I thought he was trying to say that I looked as if I'd been crawling through dirt, which I did. Or perhaps that I looked like a heap of dead weeds, which I also did. Finally, I remembered that I was extramuros, where the old literal meaning of harrowing had been forgotten thousands of years ago, and it had become a cliché, uprooted from any concrete meaning. None of this could be explained to the stranger, so all I could do was sit there and helplessly giggle, which made my ribs hurt, and hope he wouldn't take umbrage and slug me. But he was patient. He even looked a little pained to behold someone in such a pathetic state, which was fortunate, since he was a big man and could have slugged me hard. This gave me an idea that stopped the giggle. "Hey," I said, "do you have any spare clothes? I'd buy them from you."
"You do need clean clothes," the stranger said.
This brought me back to giggling. From time to time, I'd get a whiff of myself. I knew it was bad, but I couldn't very well don my bolt.
"I have more clothes than I need and will gladly part with them," he said.
He had an odd way of talking. Quasi-literate seculars went to stores and bought prefabricated letters, machine-printed on heavy stock with nice pictures, and sent them to each other as emotional gestures. They were written in a stilted language that no one ever spoke aloud, except for this guy who was standing in front of me, letting fly with words like harrowing. He went on,
"I don't ask for anything in return, but I do hope you'll join me for services after you've changed."
So that was it. This guy wanted to convert me to his ark. He had been watching me and had picked me out as a wretch, a soul ripe for saving. I had nothing better to do, and it had become all too obvious that I needed to grow a little wiser in the ways of the secular world. So I threw away my stinking clothes and my suit sack, bathed as best as I could while standing in front of a sink, and put on this guy's funny-smelling clothes. Then I went to a hot, crowded cabin where his ark was holding its services. There were a dozen and a half devotees and one magister, a leathery man named Sark, who apparently spent his life banging around on ships like this, ministering to sailors and fishermen. This was a kelx, a triangle ark. Its adherents were called Kedevs. It was a completely different faith from that of Ganeliel Craed. It had been invented about 2,000 years ago by some ingenious prophet who must have been unusually self-effacing since little was known about him and he wasn't worshipped as such. Like most faiths, it was as fissured and fractured as the glaciers I'd been walking over lately. But all of its sects and schisms agreed that there was another world outside of and greater, in a sense more real, than the one we lived in. That in this world there was a robber who had waylaid a family. He had slain the father outright, raped and killed the mother, and taken their daughter with him as a hostage. Not long after, while trying to evade capture, he had strangled the innocent girl. But he had been caught anyway and locked up in a dungeon for a long time, half of his life, while waiting for his case to come before a magistrate. At the trial, he admitted his guilt. The magistrate had asked if there was any reason why he should not be put to death. The condemned man had responded that there was such a reason, one that had come to him during his years in the dungeon. As he had meditated over his hideous crimes, the one thing he had never been able to chase from his mind was the murder of the girl, the innocent. Because in her there had been the potential to do so many things that could now never be realized. In any soul, the condemned man argued, was the ability to create a whole world as big and variegated as the one that he and the magistrate lived in. But if this was true of the innocent, it was true of the condemned man as well, and so he should not, no one should ever, be put to death.